So today we're entering the third phase of the retreat with metta as no reference. Metta with no reference. But before I talk about metta with no reference, I'm going to say a bit about how you receive retreat content. And it's a bit of an art being on retreat and finding our way, finding what is most kind and helpful for us with our particular conditions, our particular struggles, our particular views of self and how things are, our particular states of heart, mind and body. And the words of others, we bring our own conditions to how we hear them. And this has a downside and an upside. So we misperceive others' words, don't we, so often. Because of our view of ourself, of them, of how things are, we fail to hear part of what's being said, or we misperceive it, we misperceive their intention. And so much suffering comes from that. And the more we can see that process, how the heart, mind, and body state forms the perception, the more we can remember to check things out and not have to fall down a great hole of suffering before we then find that actually they didn't mean it like that. So that's the downside. The upside is that this filtering process whereby we ignore some things or allow something, we hear some things more than other things. This filtering process that I talked about more in relation to the visual last time. But that filtering process has an advantage. It's kind of necessary to prevent overwhelm. We can't pay attention to everything. Too much. So a little example of this with the auditory field. This is again with the visual. The brain filters out the visual information that comes onto the retina when the body or the eyes are moving. Because otherwise, it would be a little bit like when you get video footage that's been taken without a tripod. And it's quite annoying or even unsettling to watch because you've got the change, you know, of what's being seen, and then you've got change, movement, extra movement added in. So the brain kindly filters out for us and kind of artificially stabilizes what we see. Thank you very much, that's helpful to us. And similarly, when we hear a Dharma talk, we filter. Some things resonate, some things are just not helpful for where we are at. And I have had the experience a number of times now where someone has come to me and said, that thing that you said in the talk, or that word that you used in the guided meditation, that was so wonderful. that thing, you know, that just really opened the door, and then this happened, and then this unfolding, I understood this, and I'll say something like, you know, oh, that just sounds great. But I didn't actually say that. I didn't say that word. It wasn't that word I used. Or I didn't mean it like that. Or I didn't mean it quite like that. But it doesn't matter. Because that person has heard what they needed to hear. So I just really encourage you on this retreat and in other contexts to hear what you need to hear. And if the content this morning is too much, you've already got a way of reperceiving that is opening the heart, and you just want to stay with that, then just let it wash over you. Maybe it will be relevant at a later time, maybe not. So just going with what actually opens the heart, with what resonates. It might just be that all you need is one line from one of the poems. That's enough. And Zen Master Thich Nhat Hanh has said that it's okay if you fall asleep in a Dharma talk, because you'll get what you need anyway. So I find that a little bit, I'm not sure about that. That's what he said. So, our touchstone is metta. That's what matters. Anything that connects us with that. Great. So in this phase of metta with no reference, we are exploring letting metta flow beyond these perceptions of separate self, separate other, metta, as a thing, separable. Letting metta be unrestricted by these boxes, these boundaries. So in the puja, it says, understanding what is other to be empty of its own essence. Understanding what is self to be empty of its own essence. Understanding what is called love to be empty of its own essence. So we say this, we say self, other, metta, that empty of isolated existence. There's no separation, subject and object, self and other. But what's going on? Because we perceive the separation, don't we? We perceive self, another. It's not just an idea of you. It is also an idea and a view, but it's not just that. So, talked before about how the view and the perception build each other. So I'm going to go a bit into the detail of that, how the view of self, the view of separation, builds and is built by the perception of self and separation. So, practice we were emphasizing at the beginning of the retreat, noticing our commonality of experience. Others feel this. So perceiving, seeing that there's commonality. When we don't see that, we are solidifying that view of separation, of disconnection. And the more we see and feel and know that commonality, the more that can shift our view of separation.
Just say that again.
So the more that we see and feel and know that commonality, others feel this, the more we can dislodge the view, the idea that we're separate, and have that experience of solidarity, of being alongside. So, because of this idea of separation, we ignore, we don't notice our interconnectedness. We don't perceive our interconnectedness in terms of how we're just affecting each other all the time through our words, if we're speaking, through our actions of body, and through how we're perceiving each other. We talked about this before, being perceived with the eyes of love affects our experience, affects us. Perceiving other people with eyes of love is a gift, it shapes them, shapes their experience. And again, the more we see that, the more we undermine that view of separation. And the more that we see how our perceptions of others are shaped by our own state of heart, mind, and body. Again, we talked about this before. We see that shaping. And this is another way that we can undermine this view, this idea of separation. So this perception of another, it's shaped by everything that shapes me. It's conditioned by my state of body and heart mind. So how can that be separate from me? And the way others perceive me, shaped by them, by their, all their conditioning. And this is another way that we can unfabricate this view, this perception of separateness. So in the poem from Neruda yesterday, he says, things, men, women, actions and struggles keep making me what I am, opposing me, employing my hands, opening my eyes, putting taste in my mouth. And then he speaks to the clothes, and thus, clothes, I make you what you are, pushing out your elbows, bursting the seams, and your image swells the image of my life. So he makes the clothes what they are, and then the clothes affect him as this mutuality, this relationship. It's a relationship, not a thing, but a relationship. And it's one way you can talk about emptiness, it's just to say everything is a relationship, everything's relational, nothing's isolated. Thank you. major condition for fabricating this perception of separation is craving and aversion. It builds, so the view of separation builds and is built by craving and aversion, the perception of separation and the view. And in the puja last night, in the reading, Bhante says, if we have no desires to be fulfilled, there is no subject and no object, no self and other. If we have no desires to be fulfilled, there is no subject and no object. So no craving, and that means no aversion, because they go together, two sides of the same coin. So I'll see a little bit more about how that works. How does craving and aversion build this separation? So when there's craving and aversion, there's always tightening in the body. I've mentioned this before. And that tightening makes us feel sort of more solid, more dense, like there's more boundary. And when there's less craving and aversion, more metta, which is non-craving, non-aversion, the body's experienced in a different way. It's lighter, more porous, less boundary, less dense. So the craving and aversion brings this sense of solid, here I am, I can feel myself. There's something here to hold on to. Me. Separate. And it's a little bit like in a children's drawing when they have the draw a big line around. You know, we kind of, that tightening brings a sense of boundary. And you can look, when you're grounding and connecting with the earth, at how that sense of boundary is just an idea, actually. It's just a kind of perception. There's no boundary to be found there. It's just sensations of pressure, maybe, and that contact with the ground. You could say that those belong to the ground or that they belong to the body. It's arbitrary, they're just an arising between. So when we say that this is the body, the earth is our wider body, it's like it's not just a metaphor in a way. It's like we can't exist without it, we don't exist without it, we don't float in space. So another thing that happens when we tighten in this wanting or not wanting is that the mind space tightens.
Can you say that again? Sorry.
The space of awareness, the mind space tightens. So it's like the opposite of the sky-like. And there's a sky-like mind, a breadth in the mind space. There's a sense of, again, the porous lightness. When we tighten around something that we want or don't want, our attention has become sort of blinkered and focused on that one thing. And in that, we make that one thing more prominent in awareness, more solid, becomes more substantial as an object. So another aspect of this is that there's a kind of imagining that goes on. So Vajrasakhi from Tiratan Loka, I heard her say one time that most of the time we're doing the me sadhana, doing a me visualization. We are imagining to ourselves a separate and solid me. And in a way, we do this. But the problem is that we're not doing a very, you know, the me sadhana is it's not a good sadhana, is it? A lot of the time. So if we're going to do a sadhana, you know, could... to at least do a good one. I mean, there's more I could say about that. There's nothing wrong in a way with having a story of self. The more that we see that that's empty, the more we can do that. We can have a sense of this is me, this is my path, this is what's meaningful. But it's the painfulness of that, the exhaustingness of the me sadhana that we're normally doing, which is the problem. In all of this, it's the dukkha and the freedom that matters. So, an example of how we're imagining. When there's craving and aversion, there's an almost subliminal imagining that goes on. This can be very useful to notice if you got working with addictions. There's always, say you've got an addiction around biscuits. When there's a craving for a biscuit, it'll always be a kind of imagining. A little image of biscuit pops up in the mind, and often we don't notice that, and then the hand's in the biscuit jar, and we haven't noticed. And then there's also an imagining of the self, identified as the body, moving forward. That's always there with any volition, with any urge. There's an imagining of moving towards or away. So this is why I was talking in the other day about the kind of resting back into the body. Because we tend to sort of be in the forward, in the front of our body, with a sense that there's this me moving forward in time. We sort of picture ourselves, or have a sense of ourselves leaning forward.
Stepping away from the biscuit tin.
Stepping away
from the biscuit tin.
Well, I'm saying that
in our imagining.
If you're craving the biscuit, then there's a sense of wanting to move towards it. If you're averse to something, feeling frightened or anxious or something, resistant to something, then there's a sense of moving away from it. There's a leaning. And when there's that space of not wanting equanimity, there can be a real sense of freedom from that. Being almost like being in the eye of the storm, being aligned, being not moving towards or away. So there's sort of more that can be said about all this, but I think there's nearly enough. but we have all of this, all these conditions that fabricate perception of self and an idea of self, and they all kind of co-arise. So you've got craving and aversion co-arising with a sense of self. Stronger craving and aversion, the stronger the sense of self. And of course, craving and aversion goes with dukkha. And it goes with tightening in the body, and it goes with tightening in the mind space. So all of those things co-arise, and that means that they co-cease. That if you just lessen one of them, the others will lessen. And you can really watch that conditionality. Just, you know, broadening out the space of awareness, broadening out the view. Less sense of self. The other one that co-arises is the sense of other, a solid, a sense of separation. You broaden out the mind space, less tightness in the body, less dukkha, less sense of separation, sense of self, less sense of other. So, metta lessens this fabrication of self. It's the opposite of craving and aversion, so it has to. And that's why just, you know, it goes with opening in the body. And that's why just opening, relaxing tension in the body can allow the heart to open. So just saying a little bit now about metta, love metta, empty of its own essence. So we looked at how metta arises out of conditions. And I'll just take one of those conditions as an example, turning towards. So think about that. It's like you can't really separate metta from turning towards. It's kind of like metta turns towards, that you could say metta, that's the activity of metta, that it turns towards. Or you could say that, well, turning towards is metta, or metta is turning towards. They're not really separable. They're not the same as each other, nor different from each other. So metta can't be found separate from the conditions that it arises with. It's not isolatable. It can't be grasped, it can't be pinned down and put in a bottle and said to be this and just this.
Say that again, metta cannot be found separate.
Separate from the conditions that it arises with. And out of, that it co-arises with. is going to overflow any containers that we try to squidge it into. And as Bhante said in the Living with Awareness quote, everything ultimately mysterious. It can't be pinned down. It cannot be mysterious. And everything is like this. This is what emptiness means. Everything is like this, and we are like this. So I'm going to finish there.